Solange sipped her coffee. That was my car. I drove the Mercedes at school. I came from a very wealthy family. When I took the Matisse and said it would remind me of my father, it is because he had a Matisse hanging in his home study. Todd's mouth dropped open a bit. No way, he muttered as an impulse. I was a princess. Not literally, but I was a spoiled princess from Ecuador. My father's favorite. I lost a lot during El Encantado. My family, my country, my money is all gone. She sipped and looked at Todd. I have found a new family, and I will do whatever it takes to make sure I do not lose it. We are leaving tomorrow after services. If Sal is not here, that is Sal's problem. She put her paper cup down on the table. You are a good person, Todd. She reached across the table and put her hand on top of his. You have a good heart. I will make sure we use our head tomorrow. These people know the plan. They know where we are going. It is up to them to decide what to do. I will make the hard choices, if we need to make them. I know you could, but it is not your nature to make the evil decision. Todd nodded, because she was right. Todd was too nice to make a hard decision like leaving people. He appreciated her honesty and her strength. Today we'll check out the sights, and tomorrow we leave at noon, he replied. Bien, she said, patting his hand before standing up. I am going to wake the children. They have been watching too much television. It is time they learned how real football is played. Solange opened the door to the other RV and found the kids watching a DVD. No more television today. Put on your clothes. We are playing soccer before breakfast. We are playing soccer after breakfast, and then you are going to see the Statue of Liberty. Oh, no, come on, they whined in unison. Just one more show, please. No, come outside. You have been watching too much television. Today is an outside day. I will give $1 to anyone who can score a goal against me. Brian was on to her. We don't use money anymore. Don't be so sure, Solange lied. The kids reluctantly put on their outside clothes. Casey and Jackie wanted to be on Solange's team, girls against guys. That's not fair without Craig and Matt, Jacob complained. We can take them, don't worry about it. Jay was always the optimist and perhaps a bit overconfident in his skills. Todd watched from the RV window as Solange brought the kids into the street. There was soon screaming, yelling, and laughter. A warm wind brought spring weather, and while it was chilly, it was not as bitter as the previous day. The sun shone down 59th Street from the east. Todd made French toast from the leftover dinner bread. He liked the combination of carbs, protein, and sugar to give the kids energy for the long day of sightseeing. It also allowed him to conserve most of the eggs for the new people. The RV door opened, and Emily walked in. Where's the Suburban? Did John drive down to pick up the other people? He left. I know. Where did he go, and why did he take the animals? She poured herself a cup of coffee, walking up behind him and giving him a one-armed hug with a kiss on his cheek. It was nice to sleep in a king bed with you again. Last night was almost like a vacation. He turned around and hugged her face to face. I know. He kissed her on the mouth, and they enjoyed a husband and wife moment. John, Matt, and Craig left for New Hampshire. They took the animals and were meeting them up there tomorrow. He told her quickly, like he was ripping off a bandage. There was a stunned silence. That seems to me it should have been a group decision, not a Todd and John decision. Emily stepped back from their hug with an angry look on her face. He took his truck. I asked him to take the animals. I don't want to get into an argument. Would you ask someone's permission if Jay or Brian were alone in Hanover and you wanted to go after them? John leaving to rescue his child is not a group decision. He woke up and decided being 5 hours away from Greg for another day because some woman wants to have a church service was not in the cards. He offered to stay. I told him to go. He deserves to be selfish about this one. Emily's shoulders sagged, and she dropped her head, closing her eyes. She let out a sigh. You're right. I'm just upset he's gone, that we're separated again. She looked up at him. I heard Craig's door open and shut this morning, but I didn't want to get out of bed. I wish they had waited to say goodbye, that's all. She sipped more of her coffee and sat at the table. It's only one day. We'll be fine. Todd's cinnamon sugar French toast made the RV smell delicious, despite Hubba's attempts to make it otherwise. Let's stick to our schedule. We go down to the Statue of Liberty. We try to get over to Ellis Island. We have a fun day in New York City. Solange wants to run the kids around. She says they've been watching too much TV. Well, she's right there, but we've been kind of busy. Emily was preoccupied thinking about John. I'll go out and cheer them on. How long before breakfast? She clipped a leash on Hubba, not because he would run away, but because it was the only way she could get the dog to come outside in the morning. 10 minutes? I want to get a crust on the French toast. I have 2 pans baking. He walked over to pull on his coat. I can watch the kids, too. The couple exited the RV with their dog, walking to the soccer game. Brian ran over, red-faced and panting. Solange owes me $3. He ran off again. Melanie was awake and watching the game. She ambled towards Todd and Emily. I was lazily watching from my bed. Did John take the animals and go somewhere? He went to New Hampshire to find his son. He couldn't wait another day. Todd asked him to take the animals to help us out. Emily watched the game while she told Melanie, hoping her nonchalant attitude would play down the magnitude of the comments. I'm surprised he lasted the full week in D.C., let alone another day here. I would have left the group a week ago. Good for him. She walked towards the RV. I need some of that coffee. 35. Craig slept in the third row bed. Matt and John drove quickly towards Hartford, Connecticut. Once they got onto a highway, they drove as fast as the conditions allowed. The snow was dangerous, but the chains on the tires gave enough traction for a safe 60 miles per hour. We have a decision to make when we get to Hartford, John told Matt. We can drive towards Boston and check to see if Greg stayed at Hightower. Maybe consider looking for survivors. Or we can skip Boston and drive directly to Hanover, doubling back to Boston from Hanover if we don't find Greg up there. I'm still not sure what's going on. Why did we suddenly jump in the car and drive to Hanover? I thought we were waiting until Sunday. Matt envied his youngest brother, sleeping in the back seat bed. John could not take his eyes off the road. He was driving too quickly over the ice and snow. But he wanted to look at his son and let Matt see the sadness in his father's face. I couldn't wait. I'm sorry. I miss my son. I can't take not knowing if he's alive. If the snow was that low in New York, there's a good chance it's melted up in New Hampshire. Maybe we can get through. It's a sunny day. The snow will be slushy, easier to manage. You just woke up and couldn't take it? I mean, I'm excited we're finally going to find Greg. But I don't get it. Matt looked out the window at the scenery racing by. I'm sorry if I'm scaring you or causing confusion. I was at a breaking point. I can't sleep. I'm not eating as much as I should. I had to go. He paused. What do you think? Hanover or Boston? Hanover, Matt said with confidence. Agreed, John replied. He's in Hanover. You and I know it. Matt looked at his watch, double-checking the time he read on the dashboard clock. It's only 7:30? Yeah. Well, I didn't get breakfast. Craig didn't eat. We just hooked up and left. I'm not even sure I have clothes. Don't be such a wimp. We'll find you some clothes up there. Grab some of the cereal from the box in the seat behind you. All Todd's home cooking has made you soft. Time to toughen up. Enjoy the adventure. John teased his son. I'll be okay, Matt whined. It's just, I could have gotten some breakfast. He reached behind his seat and pulled out a box of corn cereal. He looked for something else, anything else, and found only a bottle of water. Are we out of the breakfast shakes? I get dry corn cereal and water? Come on. Soft. This new life has made you soft. Unbelievable. I can tell this is going to be a fun ride. I hope there's food up there. Food that hasn't gone rotten in the last 6 months, or burst from being frozen. Soft, John repeated. Marshmallow soft. They reached Hartford in 90 minutes. After Philadelphia and New York, John believed there was little chance survivors stayed in the northern cities. Finding the New York survivors was a fluke, a mistake made by people who did not leave when they should have. As John drove further north, to colder cities, he assumed they were empty. What could keep a person in Hartford? The ocean was 200 miles east. I'd have gone to Providence if I stayed up north at all, John thought to himself. Being near water is a must. Are we stopping? Matt asked. It was the first thing he said since their breakfast debate. You think anyone is here? If we come through, honk our horns, maybe survivors will be ready for the caravan tomorrow. No, I don't want to stop. We have a tough drive left, lots of turns, and probably snow-covered roads. I don't want to wait and talk to any survivors. It will take too long. So unless someone flags us down or runs in front of the car, Matt said jokingly. I'll slow down and yell where we're going. How's that? John said back.
What's going on?
Craig sat up, waking from the conversation.
Did you carry me from bed and put me in the Suburban? Where are we?
He was confused. Matt turned around in his seat. We left to find Greg. The rest will follow us tomorrow. We decided, as a family, that we waited long enough. It's time to get our brother. What do you think?
Awesome,
Craig yelled.
But what's for breakfast?
He leaned over to look in the trunk area of the SUV.
Oh, never mind. I found a box of breakfast shakes.
Matt glared at his father. Yeah, that's where I put the breakfast stuff. Sorry about that. I knew we had it somewhere. Craig flipped Matt a milkshake. John turned on the CD player. He respected Craig's sleep time, but Craig was awake now, so the music came on. 2 hours after Hartford, the road became tricky with lingering snow. John was forced to reduce his speed. They hit patches of ice on overpasses and perpetually shady spots on the highway. Most of the time, there was a single strip of clear road. John kept his right tires in the strip for traction. The snow, while a hazard, was soft and slushy. John was confident he could make it to New Hampshire, but it was going to take time. Towing a heavy trailer full of animals did not help his situation. "We'll make it. I just didn't realize it would take us all day," he explained as they passed a sign that read, "Lebanon, 21 miles." Matt slapped Craig on the back. "That's where we're going. 21 miles. He rolled down his window and yelled, "We're coming for you, Greg!" John slowed the Suburban to 35 miles per hour. Probably an hour, unless we hit a clear patch or a bad patch. John checked the fuel gauge. They still had over half a tank. He looked at Matt. "Give him another yell. Tell him it'll be an hour." Matt rolled his window down again and repeated his father's statement. 8 months of heartache were coming to an end. John felt like he could run the last miles if needed. 50 minutes later, they were looking down at West Lebanon's shopping centers as they drove slowly over the frozen bridges. The SUV was silent, hoping Greg was all right, praying they would find him in Hanover at John's childhood home. The drive was slow, but thankfully uneventful. John kept his speed low and the truck with trailer under control. They approached the exit ramp to Norwich, Vermont, and stopped at the top. John inspected the exit's condition. "Just snow. It doesn't look like the ice is too bad. I'm going to take it slowly." He let up on the brake and inched the truck down the ramp. The chained tires gripped the snow, and they had no issues. John continued his slow pace down the small hill towards the bridge spanning the Connecticut River and separating Norwich from Hanover. Matt pointed across the bridge.
"Is that a Jeep? It doesn't have any snow on it. It's parked in the road."
"Wait, does Greg know how to drive?"
"Maybe he learned," Craig replied.
"It's possible, or there could be another person here. Maybe Greg found someone. Look at the worn tire marks from the bridge into Norwich. Whatever the situation, it tells me that Wheelock Street is too icy to go up. We'll have to walk from here. It's not far, don't worry." John pulled the Suburban next to the Jeep and turned it off. "I hope you brought your snow boots."
"I'm not sure I brought a jacket," Craig said, looking around the back seat.
"It's 48. I think you'll live in your sweatshirt." Matt rubbed his brother's hair.
Have the last few weeks made you soft or something? Unbelievable.
Matt's wry smile was pointed at John. We'll come back for the animals, figure out a different way into Hanover. It might require us to drive back through Lebanon where the hills aren't as bad.
John pulled a backpack out of the Suburban and stuffed water and power bars into it. He did not know if he would find Greg thirsty and hungry like the people in New York, or healthy like the people in D.C.
He prepared for both.
The Dixon men walked up the hill, following the footprints left by Hank and Greg that morning.
There's at least one person here, and they've used this hill a bunch of times. I'm not a tracker, but I swear there are two sets of footprints. There's fishing tackle in the jeep. There must be a good fishing spot for the person to drive to. Maybe in Norwich?
Matt enjoyed a good mystery. He knew his brother did not know how to drive, and self-teaching was an interesting theory, but not probable.
Dad's fishing club, John said to himself. There's a fully stocked trout pond. You both remember, right?
How would he remember that?
How could he even find it?
Greg must have remembered.
Craig was getting excited. At the top of the hill, they looked into the town and at the buildings surrounding the Dartmouth Green. The leaves from autumn poked through melted patches of snow. It was just after 3 p.m.
It's so peaceful. Just like everywhere else we've been.
Matt spun around. It's nice after New York. I thought that place was creepy. All those buildings and windows. I felt like people were watching us.
Me too. That's so funny. I stayed in the trailer because I didn't like looking up at the buildings.
Craig laughed, happy someone else was scared of New York. Come on. John turned left on Main Street. We can come back and check out the town later. Let's get to the house and see if anyone's there. They walked briskly, a purpose to their steps. The snow was a few inches deep on the street. The men were not prepared. Even though they stayed in a well-worn path from town, their sneakers were soaked. They walked about 200 yards down Main when they noticed a porta-john one road over from them. It was sitting on its side next to a storm drain. There was a patch of road shoveled out around the blue plastic rectangle. A dumpster sat next to the bathroom.
That was recent. Someone shoveled the snow.
John looked around.
How did he haul a heavy bathroom over to a storm drain? Why did he haul a heavy bathroom over to a storm drain?
They walked between two administration buildings and inspected the plastic box. There was a snowmobile track behind the bathroom.
Let's follow this. It must lead somewhere.
They stepped into the path made by the sled used to haul the bathroom. Two snowmobile treads. I know your brother doesn't know how to ride a snowmobile, and even if he could, I doubt he could ride two at the same time. There's someone up here with him, or two people with him.
They walked down the road following the trail. The tracks passed a large white building used to raise money for Dartmouth College and turned left on Main Street.
Matt continued to inspect the area. The town looks intact. No looting or fires or crazy damage. It looks peaceful and empty.
John turned to his sons. This is leading us to my old house. He must have found a porta-john to use when the pipes froze or the water gave out. Smart thinking. We're going to take a left at the top of Choate Road. Walk right down my old street.
John's heart beat quickly. No one else would move into that house except Greg. He was alive.
I used to drive down this road every day in an old Ford station wagon. The high school is on the other side of town.
We know, Dad. We've heard the stories.
Craig rolled his eyes and turned to Matt.
Do you know how bad it's going to be when Uncle Paul shows up? The two of them together in Hanover? I'll be going to bed at 7 just to get away from it all.
Matt laughed at his younger brother.
I'll probably join you. It's going to get bad.
That's enough from you two. I do not tell that many stories.
Did he?
John started thinking. Maybe he did tell too many stories when he and Paul got together.
My feet are soaked.
Matt looked down at his wet shoes. I really should have packed some boots.
Matt bumped into his father.
Whoa, he said. Sorry.
John was stopped at a white house near the corner of Main Street and Choate Road. Smoke billowed out of the chimney. The front path was cleared using a snowblower. There was a clean trail from the front door heading towards the golf course. The sign in front of the house read, Webster Cottage. Matt looked at his father, then back at the house. Mom made us take a tour here. Daniel Webster lived in there, or slept there or something. I couldn't figure out what he did, but it's some historic cottage built in the late 1700s. It has a wood stove and fireplaces in every room. It's a smart place to live. He looked at Craig. Do you remember that tour? It was like 85 in Hanover, and Mom made us go into that tiny house that did not have air conditioning and walk around while some lady talked about colonial times. Brutal. Well, John announced, let's see who's home. They walked up to the front door. John knocked. There was a pause before the door opened.
Hey, John, glad you could make it.
Hank looked at his brother and nephews. Did you guys walk here? Hank wondered why he did not hear a vehicle. He looked around for a car or truck on the road.
Hank? You're here? How did you get here? When?
John was confused.
Greg?
Hank yelled into the house. It's for you. He stepped down and gave John a hug, but he could tell his brother was not interested in him. Go ahead, John. He's in there. Hank looked at Matt and Craig.
You guys are huge.
He stepped out of the cottage. Your brother is inside. He's fine. We're all fine. We just finished cleaning up after lunch. John walked into the house, scanning the surroundings. The bedroom to the right had four beds, neatly made, and the living room to the left was clean and uncluttered. John felt like he was dreaming. Not only had he found Greg, but it looked like his son was living a perfectly normal life. Hank held his nephews at the door. Give your dad a minute. Even 30 seconds alone with your brother, okay? Matt and Craig nodded. They understood. Hank had to know.
Where's your car? How did you get here?
We were just talking about how the road is clear and someone might be coming soon.
Unbelievable.
Literally, an hour ago at lunch, we told Paul and Rebecca the roads were clear.
Uncle Paul is here too? Matt asked.
Who's Rebecca? Craig asked at the same time. John was in the living room when Greg came around the corner from the kitchen with a wide grin.
You made it, he said to his father.
John lost his composure immediately, dropping to his knees and weeping, his face in his hands. His shoulders heaved under his coat. Greg got on the floor with his father, hugging him.
We made it, Dad. We made it. It's okay. We're all okay.
You're all I've thought about for 8 months. I had to keep your brother safe, or I would have walked here to find you.
I know, Dad, I know. I'm okay.
Please, forgive me for leaving you, please. Please understand.
John hugged his son tightly.
I love you so much. I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. Forgive me, I'm sorry.
Paul and Rebecca watched from the dining room. Rebecca was crying. Paul put his arm around her, pulling her close. Hank let Matt and Craig into the house after a minute. He could not hold them back any longer. John and Greg rocked on the floor, kneeling together in a hug. Matt tapped his brother on the shoulder.
Hey, how are things?
Greg stood up and grabbed him. He opened one side of the hug and pulled Craig in.
We all made it. Can you believe it?
Greg was overwhelmed his brothers were alive.
We all made it.
Greg broke his hug.
You guys have to meet Rebecca. She's my best friend. I met her on my way up here back in October. She saved my life. I wouldn't have made it through another week without her.
He looked into the dining room.
Rebecca, come meet my family.
He waved her over. Rebecca stepped into the room. Paul followed her and went to his twin brother.
How are you? Paul asked as they embraced. Have you heard from Todd?
Hank stepped behind the two men and patted John on the shoulder. John composed himself.
There's a lot to talk about.
He sniffed loudly, wiping his hand on his sleeve. Rebecca extended a tissue, which John took while giving the girl a bewildered look.
Todd and his family are in New York City and planning to come up tomorrow afternoon. He has 17 other people with him, survivors we've met on the way up here.
Huh?
Hank said.
Did you say 17 people
plus Todd and his two kids?
Don't forget Aunt Emily, Matt said, not realizing Hank and Paul did not know she was alive.
Wait, Emily is alive? That's impossible.
Paul's mouth was half open in amazement. Like I said, John gave Paul a pat on the back. We have a lot to talk about.
So you saved my son's life.
John looked at Rebecca.
Thank you, he said. Thank you with all of my heart. But how did you two kids make it up here and survive through winter?
Pretty easy, actually, Rebecca told him. But we don't want to do it again. She smiled at Greg.
Not if we don't have to.
Okay, first things first, John began. We have a Suburban parked at the bottom of Wheelock next to your Jeep.
I can drive now, Greg blurted. Uncle Hank taught me.
John paused, giving his son a smile. Okay, that's great. But what I need to say is, we have chickens and a few goats in a trailer that we need to bring up. Do you have a different route to get into Hanover?
Goats? Hank asked.
Where are we going to keep goats? He turned to Paul.
Did he seriously say he brought goats?
This is where the world is? People show up with goats and expect to stay in our house? I had a problem when people wanted to bring dogs to my house. Now I have to accommodate goats?
4 goats, 15 chickens, John replied dryly.
Rebecca thought about it before speaking. We have a coop set up, but I don't know if it can handle 15 more chickens. Maybe if we put a ramp or something out that back door. It's not cold anymore. We can house the goats in the wood room off the porch, you know, clear some space for them there, put some of our shredded paper in there.
You already have chickens? John asked.
Yes, I brought them from Concord. I had some neighbors who were urban farmers. I took their chickens, Rebecca explained.
Matt looked at Greg and gave him an elbow, winking about Rebecca.
Greg blushed.
Dad, Matt said, why don't we walk the goats up here, maybe carry the chickens? It might take a few trips, but faster and easier than handling the roads and hills.
Sounds like a plan. We can talk while we walk.
Paul moved to the coat rack in the corner of the living room near the door. He pulled on his coat and went for his boots. He looked down at the new arrival's feet.
Do you three want to borrow some boots and dry socks?
That would be great, John said, taking his backpack off and setting it on the floor. The goats can wait. Do you have any food?
Paul hung his coat back up.
Yeah, I think we can feed you. I'll put the last 2 trout in the oven and put some water on the stove. Paul left the living room.
Dad's trout club.
I knew that's why the Jeep was down there full of tackle. Have you been using baited hooks at Dad's club? Are you insane?
Hank smiled.
If we are here when the ice melts, I'll use a bobber and worms. The fish are giant at that place.
Matt walked into the dining room and looked at the computers, data, and maps adorning the walls.
What's this?
Rebecca is running some models to show the optimal place to live, to settle. We've been inputting data about climates, crop yields, that sort of stuff.
We have some things to talk about, too.
They gathered in the kitchen, letting the new Dixons eat at the table, while the others talked about their adventures. There were endless stories, and the conversation continued until dusk, and the walk to the bottom of the hill to get livestock. Everyone laughed and cried countless times that afternoon. Practical questions arose. Where were the 3 new people going to sleep?
It's 6 p.m., John said to the group. Let's walk down to the old house and see if Hank, Paul, and I can get 3 beds into the study or upstairs master. Both have a fireplace. We can make it 1 night there, right? We have more than 20 people showing up tomorrow. We have to figure out where everyone is going to sleep.
There are 2 twin mattresses in the study, and it can fit at least 1 more.
Greg and I spent our first few nights in Hanover there, Rebecca told them. It's a cozy little room. We almost lived there.
Let's grab an armload of firewood and walk down, Hank announced. We might as well open up the old house. It's where someone will be sleeping tomorrow night.
By 7 p.m., the goats were on the porch. The chickens were making friends in the coop. A fire was pre-made in the old house with 3 mattresses on the ground, and Hank was cooking cassoulet in the kitchen.
The rest of the group sat on the couches and chairs in the living room. What if I told you we have a pilot? Would that put Hawaii back in the mix? If we can find a plane that works and has fuel, do we think we can make it to Hawaii? John asked Rebecca, updating her on the skill set of the arriving tribe. I don't know enough about planes to say, but absolutely. If we can get to Hawaii, it's our best option, hands down. John nodded. I'll talk to Peter when he gets here. He's a retired military and commercial pilot. He'll be able to answer those questions. What happens if we fly to Kauai or Honolulu and the airport runway is jammed with planes? Do we crash land in the ocean? Do we try to land on the beach? It's not just taking off and having fuel. It's what the heck do we do to get back on the ground? Paul ran the scenarios through his head a few times. Who else do you have in the group other than a pilot? Rebecca was curious about the talent pool John described. A surgeon and a veterinarian, but the neurosurgeon has dreams of being a farmer. She was a botany minor in college. John, who vehemently opposed meeting new people, now claimed credit for the success. We'll probably need a farmer more often than we'll need a neurosurgeon, Paul noted. Solange is a great soccer player, but she calls it football, Craig added. I didn't get to meet the New York group for more than a few minutes. They appeared to be like us, muscle and labor rather than trained skills. There was a priest, an eye banker, a few teens, and some younger kids. If your pilot, our pilot, I should say, does think we can make it to Hawaii, we can drive down to Logan to look into planes. I doubt Lebanon Regional has a plane that can make it to Honolulu. Paul sat back after a long afternoon of excitement. They ate in the living room. The kitchen table was not large enough, and the dining room table was occupied with Rebecca's work. Hank's cassoulet was delicious. We're about to share a very small room together, and you serve me beans and sausage for dinner? You are a brave, brave man, Hank, John joked. Is this a fancy Frankenbeans? Craig enjoyed the meal, but was confused about the name. Something like that, Hank assured him. The men made their way to their old home soon after dinner. I'm beat, John confessed. It was a long and tough drive up here. I'm about to fall asleep on my feet. They said their goodnights. John gave Greg an extended hug. I expect breakfast on the table when I arrive, Paul said as he walked out the door. I'm sleeping on a floor tonight. I deserve a hot meal.
We'll give you a call when it's ready. Sit by the phone,
Rebecca replied wryly and dripping with sarcasm. As they walked down the road, John asked his brothers, So, Rebecca, what's her story?
I'm pretty sure she's your new daughter-in-law, Paul smiled.
It was basically Blue Lagoon in Hanover when Hank and I arrived. Hank agreed and gave an endorsement. Greg says she saved his life. She's about to save all of our lives with her intelligence and abilities. She's a great kid, just fantastic. You're lucky Greg bumped into her. We're all lucky.
Being 13 and having the burden of her intelligence, she had it pretty rough before the rapture. I'm not saying this was a good thing that happened to her. Losing her parents was not a good thing. But her new start on life, meeting Greg, finding someone her age that likes her, being able to fit in for the first time in a long time. She's incredible.
Paul opened the door to the house. It was pitch black except for their flashlights and lantern beams. Her intelligence, John asked. Just how smart is she?
Pretty damn smart, Paul assured him.
The house was freezing. Hank lit the fire and their tiny bedroom warmed.
You said there's a priest in New York? A person of faith who still has faith? Hank asked.
The reason I left? She wants one last service in her chapel. She's a strong believer. I'm as surprised as you are, but I respect it. Paul stared at the ceiling.
21 people. That's a lot of mouths, children or not. We have to get near the ocean quickly. Our current supplies and anything we can scavenge will last a few years, but we can't build a future roaming from town to town for rotten canned food. We have to get somewhere and build a colony. We have to learn to plant, hunt, and fish. He sat up. Son of a bitch. This all just got very real to me.
It just got real to you? John asked him. Seriously. Everyone in the world died 7 months ago, and you're just feeling it getting real?
Well, yeah. You know, it's been a whirlwind. I got food and stayed in my house. I biked to Hank's. We rode to Rutland. Took snowmobiles to here. Lived with Greg. It's been a fluid timeline. I've never had to worry about food. I'm very worried about food now. 21 people can burn through food quickly. We won't even see it coming, and poof, we'll be out of food.
Damn. We have to get somewhere other than the frozen tundra of Hanover, and we have to get there this summer.
Paul rolled onto his side. It's great to see you, John. It really is. I'm going to get some sleep. We have a long day and a long week ahead of us.
It's great to be up here, finally.
John turned to Hank. So, Hank, how much weight have you lost? Were you this thin before?
Hank and Paul laughed.
Wait until you hear the story of caveman Hank living in a hole for 2 months. It's a classic.
Paul started. When I rolled up on him in Dayton, oh man, it was like finding Tom Hanks in Castaway. He was filthy. He smelled. Wow.
I can laugh a little now, but this is what really happened. They told stories well into the night, sometimes laughing, sometimes quiet as they absorbed the impact of the last 8 months. They cried when they talked about their wives' last days and the decisions each of them had to make. They were only asleep for a few hours when the sun came up over Balch Hill the next morning. Hank was the last to wake, his eyes opening to the noise of Paul and John getting dressed.
So let me get this straight. It was Todd's idea to meet up here and to live in our old house, and he's the only one who's not here. We're stuck sleeping on mattresses in a tiny room, and he's at the plaza?
36. The kids were inside eating breakfast when the church van rolled to a stop next to the RV. Todd, Emily, Melanie, Peter, and Solange stood at the front door of the RV, drinking coffee and eating French toast out of a pan. The van door slid open, and the three youngest jumped out with Avery and Meredith.
"Good morning," Emily said enthusiastically, overemphasizing her excitement to see the group of kids. "How is everyone this morning?"
Kelly slipped out of the passenger side with a smile.
"We're well. I hope we're not intruding."
"Not at all," Emily continued. "Kids, take the rest of this French toast, and you can join our crew in the RV. It's warmer inside."
She handed Meredith the tray filled with Todd's cinnamon goodness. Peter stepped forward to assist Bernie and Jamie out of the van. He was already talking to Jamie, taking advantage of meeting someone his own age.
"Is it a dumb question to ask if you already ate?" Todd asked Kelly.
"We have not," she replied, hanging her head, knowing she was asking for a handout.
"All right, but no freeloading this morning. Kelly, you come with me to help make the eggs, and the rest of you are on cleanup duty after breakfast. We share the food, and we share the work. Sound good?"
"I'd love to help make breakfast," Ahmed said, stepping out of the van after the two women. "I put myself through college as a short-order cook. I can fry a mean egg."
Todd turned to Kelly. "I guess that means you're on cleanup. Grab some coffee and we'll be out in a few. Em, can you take orders? We have 20 eggs left. I can do 2 any style, or we can scramble them all. Let me know if there's a consensus. Ahmed and I will go to work on the hash browns and sausage." Todd motioned his new co-chef into the RV.
"So, you were a cook. That's great. Funny, that's a better skill than anything else you learned in college, huh?"
Emily assumed hostess duties, pouring cups of coffee and offering people their selection of eggs. To make sure everyone ate expediently, the order for all scrambled was sent into the kitchen. Avery came outside to talk to the adults.
"Did Matt leave? I don't see him here."
Avery turned to Melanie.
"I'm sorry, I don't think I met you last night. My name's Avery."
Melanie shook her head. "Matt left this morning with his father and younger brother. They went ahead to New Hampshire to find Matt's other brother. My name's Melanie. I joined the group in D.C. via Baltimore.
Very nice to meet you, Avery. She went on to explain that Casey, Jacqueline, and Jacob were under her care. Melanie turned to meet Bernie and Jamie.
Is there someone still in the van?
Melanie asked. She saw a solitary figure in the back row, knit cap on, leaning against the window.
That's Antonio. He wanted to come, but has decided to stay in the van. I think he's afraid of being alone if Sal returns to the seminary. But he doesn't want to mingle either.
Jamie liked Antonio. She defended him often. He's a good kid. He has a good heart. He's just a little mixed up. I don't know how he grew up, but it wasn't good. I know his family was nice, but his neighborhood was not. He'll work it out.
Jamie smiled politely.
So, you're from Baltimore. I used to date an old Baltimore Orioles pitcher back in the day. He grew up outside of New York, and we went to high school together. He and I stayed a couple for a little while, but the distance was too much. Back then, you had to take the train to and from New York, and it was just too much.
Emily walked to the church van and opened the sliding door. Antonio, would you like some coffee?
He did not reply.
We'll have breakfast ready in a minute.
Are you going to join us?
She heard music coming from the headphones dangling from his ears.
Well, if you'd like some food, it's here. Fresh eggs, hash browns, and sausage?
It's not real sausage. It's these little Vienna sausages from a can, but they still taste great with eggs. Anyway, it's out here.
She slid the door shut and left him alone. Emily made her way through the people, talking and getting acquainted. The kids were eating and socializing at the table in the RV. Todd placed warm sausages in front of them. Casey was in a deep discussion with the three young newcomers about her role in the group. Meredith was joking with Jackie and Jacob. Everyone appeared to be getting along as they drank Tang and told stories. Ahmed and Todd discussed New York restaurants. Emily put her hand on Todd's back.
About how long?
We're good. Ahmed knows how to sling the hash. Do we want to set up on plates and have you walk it out to people? He turned to his cooking partner. Ahmed, please, grab a plate and eat. I had some toast before you came. The thin man accepted happily.
I was hoping you'd say that. Standing over fresh eggs? I'm starved. I'll take a plate out with me when I go.
He spooned eggs, potatoes, and sausage on two plates and headed towards the door.
Jamie, come and grab this plate and eat the eggs fast before they get cold.
Todd served the food, and Emily walked two at a time out to the adults. There was a mountain of eggs, and once the adults were eating, Todd offered seconds to the children. The new kids raised their hands.
Don't be shy. Come over. We have plenty.
He handed them new plates with the fresh food. Todd made a small plate for himself and went to talk to the group. He saw the adults standing in a circle, eating and talking. Antonio sat in the open van door with his feet on the ground. He ate his food in silence. Todd walked over and asked if he could sit down.
Whatever,
the young man replied, not moving to give him space. Antonio muttered something under his breath in Spanish. Solange walked over to the van. She stared at Antonio before turning to Todd.
Bernie is having second thoughts about leaving tomorrow. She would like to stay until Easter Sunday next week.
That crazy bitch won't learn, Antonio muttered.
Excuse me? Todd asked, annoyed at his tone and word choice.
You know why we got stuck in New York City? You know why we almost starved? She won't leave her seminary. I said to all of them, we have to leave. We have to go to Queens or Connecticut or someplace with houses. Find another church. We can't stay. Crazy Reverend Bernie wouldn't leave. Came up with every excuse to stay in her chapel. We have heat here, or we know the area, or someone will be coming for us in New York. Always the same shit.
Antonio did not lower his voice. He spoke loud enough for everyone to hear. The adults were quiet, looking at Antonio or the ground uncomfortably. Bernie hung her head.
I think she's waiting for Jesus to come riding through on a horse and take her to Candyland or something.
Antonio laughed. That's enough, Todd said quietly to him. We get the point. The young man stood and faced Todd.
Did you just tell me to shut up?
No. I asked you to stop talking about Bernie. We understand. You made your point. Saying any more would be mean, and I know you aren't trying to be mean. Todd stood his ground, though he was not comfortable with the confrontation. Antonio muttered something in Spanish under his breath, smiling to himself as he did it. Solange stepped between the two men. She slapped Antonio hard across the face.
"What the hell, bitch?"
the boy screamed, rubbing his cheek. Solange slapped him again. "If you are a man, say what you said to his face in English." Antonio looked at Todd and then to the other adults. He lowered his face in shame. "The breakfast that we made for you is still on your breath. It is still hot in your belly, and you disrespect him and us like that?" She was inches from his face. "If you are a man, do what you said. Walk. Survive on your own. We do not need another mouth to feed, and we will not feed a disrespectful child like you. If I ever hear you speaking Spanish again, you will wish all I do is slap you across the face." Solange reached out and put her hand under his chin. She lifted his face to meet hers. "Whatever you did before El Encantado, it's over. You are not a punk anymore. Be a man. Step up and help us. Do not disrespect people by speaking insults in another language. Be a role model to the kids we know you love. Grow up." She squinted her eyes to look deep into Antonio's face, trying to read his thoughts. A tear rolled down his cheek. "Do not be a boy. If you do not want to come with us, walk away. That is a choice. But acting like you are is not an option." Antonio sniffed as more tears rolled down his face. He nodded. He pulled the blue bandana off his head. "I'm sorry, sir. It will not happen again," he said to Todd. "Thank you for the food." Solange put her arm around him and whispered Spanish in his ear. Antonio chuckled. Todd was interested in what she said, but Solange let him know it was her secret. "I can speak Spanish as much as I want. I have earned it." She patted Antonio on the head and walked back to the breakfast table.
"Well, that was exciting," Jamie blurted out. "You grew up more in those 30 seconds than you have your entire life, kid,"
the older woman said encouragingly to Antonio. "And Bernie?" She turned to her friend. "The kid's right. We have to leave, and we have to leave tomorrow. I love you, and I hope you make the right decision for yourself, but I'm leaving with these people. Your selfishness, your need to stay in that chapel, has already separated 3 of them from the big group. If anything happens to them while they're alone, I hope your conscience can handle it. Take your last service, pray on what you want to do, but I'm out." Jamie walked to Antonio and put her hand on his shoulder. He sat back down on the van's floor, wiping his tears away. "You spoke the truth, Antonio. As mean as it sounds to the new people, you spoke the truth. Now, I have a little surprise for you all. Antonio?" He picked his head up to look at her when she said his name. "His father was a ferry boat operator. He knows how to pilot and, more importantly, fix most of the boats down in the harbor. He's your ticket to Ellis Island." "Huh?" Antonio said, confused by the request. Emily clapped her hands and jumped up and down in excitement. "Incredible. I knew we could find someone to get us over there." She walked to the van and sat next to Antonio, explaining their plans for the day, the Statue of Liberty tour and the Ellis Island visit.
"Yeah, I can do that, if we can find a boat that I can get to work. They've been sitting in water for a long time."
Antonio looked at Emily as if she was crazy.
"I guess we can try."
"Great," Emily said back, rubbing his shoulders.
"Thank you."
Antonio scrunched his shoulders, twisting uncomfortably at her touch. He was not used to so much physical contact or gestures of kindness.
"Yeah, can I ask a favor, too?"
A stunned Emily managed to reply. "What may I do for you?"
"Can I pet your dog? I really love dogs, and I miss mine. Do you mind?"
Antonio stood in hopes she would say yes, and he could find and pet Hubba.
"You don't have to ask again. Please, pet away.
Take him for a walk if you can. Please, Antonio, consider him your dog, too. I'd love the help taking care of him, if you decide to stay with us.
Cool,
he said back, in a somewhat return to his stoic and distant mannerisms. He thought about his reply for a second and continued.
Thank you. That's real cool of you. I'd like that a lot.
He strode past the group, stopping to give Jamie a high five.
You got fire, Jamie. You got fire.
Antonio slipped inside the RV to find the dog. Kelly stood next to Bernie. The Reverend looked sad and distant. Kelly turned to her.
I'm going to.
Avery, Meredith, and the kids will come with me. We can't stay here, Bernie. It's over. This place is dead, and if we stay, we'll all die too. The kids need you as their mother, but not if you want to stay in New York. I won't let you do that to them.
I know,
Bernie replied, her voice hollow.
I know. I'll decide tomorrow.
Her head dropped. I'll know what to do tomorrow.
Did everyone get enough? Ahmed, uncomfortable with the conversation, changed the subject and mood of the group. Is there anything left, Todd?
Absolutely. Please don't let it go to waste. Everyone should eat more if they can. Todd turned to go into the RV. I'll bring the rest out so people can take what they'd like. He went inside and saw the kids playing nicely. Jackie and Jacob had Legos out for the little kids. Meredith and the twins were helping them make things. Antonio sat on the floor next to Hubba's bed. Jay sat on the opposite side of the bed, talking non-stop to the older boy. Antonio looked at Jay, nodding and maintaining respectful eye contact. Antonio looked at Todd when he walked into the trailer, flipping his head up with a hey gesture. We're going to the Statue of Liberty in about an hour. If you want any more breakfast, now's the time to get it. Cameron stood. He had an airplane made from a multitude of red, blue, yellow, white, and black Legos.
May I have some more potatoes and sausage, please?
He was a cute kid, thin and tiny from a winter with no food. Todd got him a new plate and spooned more breakfast for him. Here you go, champ. Before he could ask, Todd put more food on a plate and gave it to Antonio. Jay will talk to you all day. Let me know if you need a break.
He's cool.
Antonio nodded.
I had a little brother. He was 6. He didn't make it. It's why I like the little kids. They remind me of him.
He gestured at the plate.
Thanks. We're all good in here. I'll be ready to help with the boat in an hour.
Thank you. Todd put his hand on Antonio's shoulder. Welcome to the group. Todd did not want to make a big deal out of it. He turned and left the RV with the remaining food to pass out to the adults.
I'll take cleanup duty.
Jamie stepped forward.
Show me where I can clean the pots and pans, and if you have a trash bag.
Peter and Kelly assisted. Todd and Emily went to the other RV to get ready for their day. The door opened, and Melanie came through with Solange.
What's the deal with Bernie? Is she seriously considering staying here? Why would she do that?
Melanie questioned.
There is not logic to her thinking, Solange commented. She has gone crazy. I am surprised more of us did not lose our minds with all of the death.
Well,
she seems nice enough, and we can always use another pair of hands.
I agree. She's popped a gasket. I hope she snaps out of it.
Emily paused.
Has anyone figured out the deal with this Sal character? Are we leaving him? Is he dangerous? Is he even going to show?
They looked at each other. Melanie shrugged her shoulders.
Hey, I just met all these people. Now there's someone else?
You just take another nap. We will wake you up if anything happens, Solange teased.
You're funny, Ms. Tough Girl. You gonna slap me in the face, too?
If you need to be put in your place.
Solange gave Melanie a steely-eyed stare.
Okay, that's enough from you two comedians.
Todd stood between them. You know what? I'm going to enjoy the day. Tomorrow is tomorrow. Let's round up the group and see some landmarks. He stepped out of the RV into the sunlight. It was shaping up to be a beautiful day. The air was warming to the mid-50s.
Avery had the kids outside playing games, kicking the soccer ball or playing hopscotch on grids she drew with sidewalk chalk.
I volunteered at the elementary school as my junior volunteer credit. I know how to entertain this age group, she explained to Todd. Brian said you're going to see the city. May I join you? I'd love to see New York one last time. I haven't been to the statue in like 5 years, and I don't remember Ellis Island. I went there once on a field trip in fourth grade.
I went last year. It's pretty fun. I can show people around, Meredith volunteered, if I get to go too.
Kelly listened. You girls can make your own decisions, especially you, Avery. This is your life. If you want to stay in New York with Bernie, speak up. If you want to go to New Hampshire and join the new group, it's up to you.
I just wanted to go to Ellis Island today, Meredith responded. I didn't know it was part of a bigger choice.
It's not, honey. I'm just saying. You two are old enough to start making some of your own decisions, or decide as a team. I'm going today, and I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm taking Bridget, Wendy, and Cameron with me, today and tomorrow.
Kelly turned to Todd, who watched the conversation with interest.
We might need to take some breaks. My kids are not as strong as yours. They haven't been eating as regularly.
Absolutely. I'm bringing plenty of snacks, as well as bread, peanut butter, and jelly. I might even bring along a jar of fluff for fluffernutters.
What's a fluffernutter? Meredith asked.
Peanut butter and marshmallow fluff mixed together in sugary brown goodness, Todd offered. If you grew up in New England, it was a regular in your lunch.
Sounds kind of sugary and caloric, Avery told her friend. I'd stick with the PB&Js.
I'll be honest with you, Avery. Our new life? Don't worry about calories too much. You want to take in calories, as many as possible. Video games, television, sedentary activities, those are a thing of the past. If you don't like fluffernutters, well, that's another story. But don't worry about what you eat. We're going to run out of processed food and be eating fish, fruits, and vegetables for the rest of our lives.
Todd smiled.
So, if you see a jar of fluff, take two fingers and swipe a big mouthful.
Meredith laughed.
Okay, I'll try it. Let's have some fun today, okay? It's probably been a while since anyone in your group had a fun day. A good old day of not worrying about food or work. Just kick back. Enjoy this beautiful spring day in New York and see it one more time.
Todd clapped his hands.
Okay, kids, he called to the younger ones. We're going to get together for a day out. How does that sound?
Todd turned to Kelly.
We're short of convenient vehicles. Any chance we can use the van?
Let's put the little ones on our laps and head out.
Antonio? She turned to the teen who was out of the RV. What's our best shot at finding a boat that's big enough for all of us and in working condition?
If we start at Chelsea, we can work our way down until we find a good boat, but there's probably one at the piers. We have to find keys to the boats. Maybe hope the dockmaster's office keeps us set.
He walked towards the van. If we get to a good boat, I can get it started, probably without the keys. He smiled at her as he said the last line.
Peter, Jamie, Bernie? Would you like to join us?
Emily stood at the van, moving the line of kids in by touching their shoulders.
Peter has challenged me to a day of cards and walking around the park. I've seen Lady Liberty enough and said my goodbyes to the city. One day I'll tell you my story. But I haven't lived in New York for over 30 years, left when I was in my 20s. I was on a trip and got stuck. I'll be glad to depart tomorrow morning. Enjoy yourselves.
Jamie sat in a folding chair Peter set outside of the RV. He plunked down in a second chair next to her. He gave Emily a thumbs up.
We'll hold down the fort, Emily. You show the kids a good time.
Todd was packing a second backpack. Ahmed, you can stay here or get dropped off at your home. We can handle this. Enjoy a day of rest. If you stay here, have dinner ready when we get back.
Todd smiled at the investment banker turned fry cook.
Are you kidding me? I've never been to Ellis Island. I worked 80 hours a week minimum. I never got to see the sights. If I wasn't at work, I was playing big shot at Yankee Stadium or the Meadowlands. This will be a real treat.
He waited for Todd to zip up the backpack before grabbing the handle to sling on his back.
I had a 3-year-old son. I talked about taking days like this, showing him New York. Now I'll do that for these kids, and dream I'm with him.
He gave Todd a pat on the back.